You know what?
What?
I feel so good when I'm with you.
Me too.
There's something I've been wanting to tell you for such a long time.
And what is that?
They say the second time is always better than the first.
Oh, yeah.
Baby, baby, falling in love. I'm falling in love again.
Yes, the world is the best place of all. Understand what you do joining us here tonight. You leave the natural world behind. The life you lived will be a dream. 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 A dream.
reds and there's the greens, super slicks and has-beens, and they're accompanied by three men dressed in black. One's a whistle, two are flags, and quite often they're the drags. Keep the ball into the goal and put it back. Yes, match of the day is the only way to spend your Saturday. Backs, but at a distance they all tend to look the same. But some on their boutiques, well, they clean up every week. Exciting riots causing chaos, such a shame. But match of the day is the only way we spend our Saturday. And that's not all. Our mates, the keepers, slipping and sliding in the mud.
If you liked school, you'll love work. The cruel, absurd abuses of power, the self-satisfied authority that the teachers and principals lorded over you, the intimidation and ridicule of your classmates don't end at graduation. Those things are all present in the adult world, only more so. If you thought you lacked freedom before, wait until you have to answer to shift leaders, managers, owners, landlords, creditors, tax collectors, city councils, draft boards, law courts, and police. When you get out of school, you may escape the jurisdiction of some authorities, but you enter the control of even more domineering ones. Do you enjoy being controlled by others who don't understand or care about your wants and needs? Do you get anything out of obeying the instructions of employers, the restrictions of landlords, the laws of magistrates? People who have powers over you that you would never have given them willingly? How is it that they get all this power anyway? The answer is hierarchy. Hierarchy is a value system in which your worth is measured by the number of people and things you control, and how dutifully you obey those above you. Weight is exerted downward through the power structure. Everyone is forced to accept and conform to this system by everyone else. You are afraid to disobey those above you, because they can bring to bear against you the power of everyone and everything under them. You are afraid to abdicate your power over those below you, because they might end up above you. In our hierarchical system, we're all so busy trying to protect ourselves from each other that we never have a chance to stop and ask if this is really the best way our society could be organized. if we could think about it, we'd probably agree that it isn't. For we all know happiness comes from control over our own lives, not other people's lives. And as long as we're busy competing for control over others, we're bound to be the victims of control ourselves. It is our hierarchical system that teaches us from childhood to accept the power of any authority figure, regardless of whether it is in our best interest or not. We learn to bow instinctively before anyone who claims to be more important than we are. It is hierarchy that makes homophobia common among poor people in the USA. They're desperate to feel more valuable, more significant than somebody. It is hierarchy at work when 200 punk rockers go to a rock club, already a mistake, of course, to see a band, and for some stupid reason the club owner won't let them perform. There are 206 people at the club, 205 of whom want the band to play, but they all accept the decision of the club owner because he is older and owns the place, i.e., has more financial power and thus more legal power. It is hierarchical values that are responsible for racism, classism, sexism, and 1,000 other prejudices that are deeply ingrained in our society. It is hierarchy that makes rich people look at poor people as if they aren't even human, and vice versa. It pits employer against employee, manager against worker, teacher against student, making people struggle against each other rather than work together in mutual aid. Separated this way, they can't benefit from each other's skills and ideas and abilities, but must live in jealousy and fear of them. It is hierarchy at work when your boss insults you or makes sexual advances at you, and you can't do anything about it. Just as it is when police flaunt their power over you. For power does make people cruel and heartless, and submission does make people cowardly and stupid. And most people in a hierarchical system partake in both. Hierarchical values are responsible for our destruction of the natural environment and the exploitation of animals, led by the capitalist West. Our species seeks control over anything we can get our claws on, at any cost to ourselves or others. And it is hierarchical values that send us to war, fighting for power over each other, inventing more and more powerful weapons until finally the whole world teeters on the edge of nuclear annihilation. But what can we do about hierarchy? Isn't that just the way the world works? Or are there other ways that people could interact, other values we could live by? Hierarchy and anarchy. Resurrecting anarchism as a personal approach to life. Stop thinking of anarchism as just another world order, just another social system. From where we all stand, in this very dominated, very controlled world, it is impossible to imagine living without any authorities, without laws or governments. No wonder anarchism isn't usually taken seriously as a large-scale political or social program. No one can imagine what it would really be like, let alone how to achieve it, not even the anarchists themselves. Instead, think of anarchism as an individual orientation to yourself and others, as a personal approach to life. That's not impossible to imagine. Conceived in these terms, what would anarchism be like? It would be a decision to think for yourself rather than following blindly. It would be a rejection of hierarchy, a refusal to accept the God-given authority of any nation, law, or other force as being more significant than your own authority over yourself. It would be an instinctive distrust of those who claim to have some sort of rank or status above the others around them, and an unwillingness to claim such status over others for yourself. Most of all, it would be a refusal to place responsibility for yourself in the hands of others. It would be the demand that each of us not only be able to choose our own destiny, but also do so. According to this definition, there are a great deal more anarchists than it seemed, though most wouldn't refer to themselves as such. For most people, when they think about it, want to have the right to live their own lives, to think and act as they see fit. Most people trust themselves to figure out what they should do more than they trust any authority to dictate it to them. Almost everyone is frustrated when they find themselves pushing against faceless, impersonal power. You don't want to be at the mercy of governments, bureaucracy, police, or other outside forces, do you? Surely you don't let them dictate your entire life. Don't you do what you want to, what you believe in, at least whenever you can get away with it? In our everyday lives, we are all anarchists. Whenever we make decisions for ourselves, whenever we take responsibility for our own actions rather than deferring to some higher power, we are putting anarchism into practice. So, if we are all anarchists by nature, why do we always end up accepting the domination of others, even creating forces to rule over us? Wouldn't you rather figure out how to coexist with your fellow human beings by working it out directly between yourselves rather than depending on some external set of rules? The system they accept is the one you must live under. If you want your freedom, you can't afford to not be concerned about whether those around you demand control of their lives or not.
We'll be right back. horses walking home. We fled across the fields until we were alone. To a bridge that stood close by the sea. The day that we spent there, it's ours eternally. I don't have to tell you, you surely understand. The person inside me made me what I am. Oh, she made me what I am. Oh.
Hello, it's Robin Lustig here, your host for BBC World Drama. In September last year, the award-winning Russian playwright Mikhail Dunyenkov spent 3 weeks in the Arctic as part of the Cape Farewell Project, which brings together artists and scientists to explore climate change. On his return, he wrote this drama, inspired by his experiences. For Mikhail, not only is there a fundamental challenge in communicating the facts about climate change, there's also a fundamental challenge in how we communicate with each other. As the melting glaciers crash around them, the characters in his play struggle both to understand each other and a changing world order.
On the Edge of the Earth by Mikhail Dunyenkov, with Indira Varma as Sirena.
Firstly, let me mention that on the very edge of the Earth, where winter lasts for 9 months of the year, there is no such town as Ugelberg. It doesn't even exist in the very north of the most northern archipelago itself. And near Ugelberg, there is no Nordgrien glacier, as intensely blue as blue marble. There is no one such as Chromoy, Vietka, Lija or Otval. None of the 2,000 people in Ugelberg really exists. And nowhere will you find a scientist like Max, or a schoolteacher like Sirena. Sirena is part of this place. Her hair, her bright russet brown hair, is the exact shade of the moss growing profusely over Ugolny Fjord's gentle slopes. The color of her eyes is indescribable. Now grey, now deep blue, exactly like softly gleaming mother-of-pearl. In a word, they are like the sky over Ugelberg in summer. And when she laughs, and she laughs often, the hearts of the people of Ugelberg, simple miners, miss a beat. as though suddenly sensing something precious and fragile within themselves that has to be further nurtured and treasured. But what's most amazing is that the people of Ugelberg, fond as they are of Serena, don't really understand her. Maybe that's because she's a teacher of foreign languages. Or maybe that's precisely why she is one.
What are you all doing here? I haven't called a parents' meeting. I'm supposed to be having a lesson.
But we don't get it either, Serena. Maybe you can explain it to us.
Who else can we ask, Serena? The men are all at work.
And no need to worry about the lesson. You've only got Rizik and Piaka in your class and they're both poorly. They've got colds.
I still don't understand why you've come.
Well,
I'll explain. It rained during the night, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Rained all night long, and at around 3 a.m, a schooner came in. Mm-hmm. Then they came into my bar, drank lots of vodka. I told them to get the hell out. I was tired, I wanted to close up. But they don't understand our language. And they wanted to go on drinking, on and on.
Well, who was drinking? What are you talking about?
The Norwegians. You know, the Norwegians who came ashore during the night.
Well, Satch is no good at telling stories.
Oh, go on, Vietka, you tell it. Let Vietka tell you.
A Norwegian schooner docked during the night.
I was the first to notice that there was a light.
This morning, someone moved into the abandoned house that the Kuliks used to live in. The schooner set sail, leaving him behind.
Who do you mean?
Well, that's what we've come here to find out.
Yes. We don't know who he is. He must be really brainy, that's what we reckon.
Well, we don't know that yet. I mean, just because he's got all sorts of gadgets doesn't mean he's brainy.
He really knows how to use them. I actually saw him putting them out and switching them on. He blew up a huge white balloon and then released it.
He used a canister to blow it up and then suddenly, boom, off it flew.
He didn't even look to see which way it was flying. Just started unpacking more gadgets. He didn't even look at it.
He really is strange. He's got a red anorak, brand new. Everything he's got on is really new. I mean, I'm good at spotting that sort of thing.
If anyone can talk to him, Serena, you can.
Yeah. Why me? Why talk to him at all? What if he doesn't want to talk to anyone?
Oh, you're smart, Serena. Oh, yeah. And you've been to the mainland. You've seen people like him over there. Forgive me, Serena, but you're not like us.
I tried speaking to him, but he just glanced at me like I was a lump of coal. Mm. And he then went on fiddling about with his gadgets.
He's closed off a piece of the shore with netting and put a keep out sign up, but there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Just moss and a frozen puddle. Oh. An ordinary bit of the shore, just like the rest of it.
Well, I mean, who knows what else he's going to do?
Yeah.
Oh, you must go and have a word with him.
Because I'm not like everyone else. That's ridiculous. All right, I'll speak to him.
Oh, thank you.
Ugelberg is the black heart on the island's red coat of arms. This isn't a poetic image. The heating in Ugelberg's on for 9 months of the year. Its chimneys belch out smoke non-stop, day and night. When Ugelberg was under construction, the meteorologists and builders failed to reach agreement, so all the soot emitted from the chimneys settles in a neat cloud on Ugelberg, and nowhere further afield. If you look down at the town from the air, you won't see houses or roads or people, just a single black spot. Only the strange newcomer's bright red jacket is different, the odd one out. This red spot is busy dragging boxes of instruments into one of the deserted houses.
Good morning. I was told you arrived by sea during the night. Hey, where are you off to? What a rude guy. Hello.
What do you want?
Want? I don't want anything from you.
There's probably nothing for you and me to talk about then. All the best.
But why are you being so aggressive to me?
You think I'm being aggressive? Sorry, I didn't mean to. Can I get on with my work now?
Well, that's not very polite.
Give me 3 good reasons why I should be polite.
For a start, if you want to live here, it wouldn't be a bad thing for you to get acquainted.
Is that a prerequisite to living here or just an option?
Really? I didn't want to come here. You see those women on the hill over there? You see them craning their necks, trying to overhear? They made me come here and talk to you. And I've got plenty of my own things to do, by the way.
Your things probably aren't all that important since you've ended up here.
Well, I'll decide if my things are important or not.
In that case, it makes no sense you're complaining to me.
Me? Complaining? Me? Okay, I admit it. Our conversation wasn't going anywhere.
So does this mean I can get on with my work?
Oh, you're such a...
You're still here.
I am furious. You've made me really angry.
I didn't mean to.
All right. Let's start all over again.
Why?
Because you've got to explain to me who you are and why you've come here. And you've got to because this house is... This house... you know what it is? It's someone else's property.
This abandoned house belongs to someone. The one with the boarded up windows, too?
Yes, both of them. In fact, all the houses on the shore here. Their owners have gone off to the mainland, but they'll be back.
I don't want to take over someone's house. There's no need for me to... Where can I rent a flat? I only need one room, just a bed and a little space for the instruments.
Then you'll have to get to know me.
All the houses in Ugelberg were built in the same year, 1964. None of the buildings here are newer or older than that. Trees don't grow in the archipelago, and everything required to construct the town was brought over by sea way back in 64. The last thing the coal board sent in to brighten their employees' lives were several large containers of suntan cream. Over 100,000 tubes of it were shipped to the island because of some mix-up in the depths of the coal board's bureaucratic machine. That's why things are looked after here, especially if it's a sewing machine with a foot pedal passed down from your mother. Unlike people, such things don't grow old in the north.
This is going to be a beautiful dress, the colour of a turquoise wave. She'll look so beautiful in it, just like a bride on her wedding day. Mind you, I don't approve of what she's doing. I reckon she's gone crazy. Utval, do you hear me? I'm saying Serene has gone completely crazy. She's not all right up there as it is. She's already 23 and still not married.
That's her business.
Now she's completely lost it. Fancy taking a stranger into your home when there are abandoned, empty houses all along the shore. I mean, why couldn't he make do with the Kulik's house, eh? I mean, why did he move into her house?
Because they're young.
You just don't give a damn. You come home from the mine, stuff yourself like a pig, go up to Upsatches, and then come back home in the middle of the night drunk and snore in bed. And off you go again to the mine in the morning. You're not interested in anything else.
Vietka, what do you want from me?
Nothing. I've wanted nothing from you for 30 years now.
Then let me eat in peace.
Something's up. Cromwell's gone off to the mainland. He's been summoned there by the management. No sooner had he left than this stranger turned up. And nobody understands why he's here. Do you mean to say none of this concerns you at all?
No, it doesn't, Vietka. Nor does it you. My job is to mine coal. Yours is to wait for me at home. Stop poking your nose into other people's business. It doesn't concern you.
That weirdo's releasing balloons. He did it again today. What for? I mean, what's he up to? And Serena was helping him. I saw her myself. Oh, do you understand what's going on, Otval? Otval, why aren't you saying anything?
Just be quiet and let me eat my meal.
So unusual. Maybe it was love at first sight. When I think about what's going to happen when Hormoy gets back and finds out she's living with the stranger, I get goosebumps. I think it's love. But what do you think? It is love, isn't it? I told her as much. I said to her, Serena, you're made for each other. You're both so, well, unlike the rest of us. That's what I thought, so that's what I said to her. But she just smiled, as only she knows how. Burr?
What?
Who's more beautiful? Me or Serena?
You.
And?
What?
Why am I more beautiful? You've never told me. Serena's very beautiful. She's also unusual. Remember when the whale swam into the fjord? She just sat on the shore till night time gazing at them. Like a child. Do you find Serena attractive?
Oh,
why is it always the same? After we make love, you stop talking to me right away. It's not fair. We're not married. If someone finds out about you coming over to my house, there'll be one hell of a fuss. We'll never live down all the talk and gossip. I'm taking a risk, you know. You just say nothing.
I'm tired.
Everyone gets tired. You get tired at the mine, I get tired at the post office. Everyone gets tired, Burr, but that doesn't mean we have to lie in bed in silence. Burr, do you love me?
Yeah.
But why?
I don't know.
How come you don't know? You don't know why you love me. I love you because you're tall, because you have strong hands, because your eyelashes are so thick and fluffy.
Yeah, that's from the coal. From the coal dust.
It's impossible to talk to you about anything. That's it, Bert, enough. Get out of bed and go wherever you like. We're obviously different people. We obviously don't understand each other at all. And it's understanding each other that matters most for me, Burr. Don't want us to be like...